Boys Lunch.
Here we go.
Hello and welcome back to Boys Lunch, a podcast for your listening ears. Join us. I am Joey. I am a junior theology teacher at Central Catholic High School, and this is my great friend, colleague, coworker, confidant, Paul.
Happy to be here.
Senior theology teacher at Central Catholic High School. I don't know how it could be more descriptive than that.
As always, we appreciate your listens and your listening ears. You can contact us if you ever want to, talk about maybe some sponsorships, ask us personal questions.
Life goals.
Things like that. You can email us at boyslunch1@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Boys Lunch Podcast. We appreciate all the new listeners that we've had. We hope we haven't let you down. But thanks again, Scott Vogel. Keep up the great work. We have some more work for you coming down the pipeline, Scott. So be aware. Appreciate you.
Paul is currently wearing a pretty hip, like, navy button-down, sleeves rolled up. He looks good. I got a little quarter zip on today. I'm thinking we're feeling cozy, feeling good.
Yeah, we're just
kind of Friday vibes, man.
Yeah, we're trying to also explore whether or not to go to YouTube. Do people really want to watch this? No, probably not. We also don't have a camera.
I think I'll just describe how we look every time.
Yeah, every time.
I think that'll get it.
Let me tell you, I'm feeling old. I am feeling ancient right now.
Explain. Do tell.
For those people who don't know, I do still try to play hockey on Thursday mornings with my brother-in-law, Chris, and some of the Central parents are playing in that league as well.
Nice.
And just to pick
shout-outs to any of them?
Shout-out to Frank Gallucci.
Nice.
Matt Johnson. It's a lot of fun. I got tripped twice.
Now, yesterday?
I am a giraffe on skates, so me falling down on the ice does happen more than others. It's not that I can't skate. It's just, I don't know. When I lose my footing, it's just a long way down, and it's usually a pretty spectacular crash. Now, yesterday I got tripped going almost full speed by the goalie when I was trying to circle the net, which meant I went face and shoulder first into the boards.
Oof.
And then again got tripped up when someone fell in front of me, and I hit my head on the ice.
In those circumstances, are those your fault?
It could be thought that maybe one who is more agile and athletic would be able to do. Now, the one by the goalie is not my fault. But anyway,
I feel like as a soccer goalie yourself, you probably tend to side the goalie, right?
Yeah, typically.
So this was the goalie's fault. Okay.
Yeah. I just can barely walk. I've had multiple students and teachers be like, "You look awful." And I'm just like hobbling down. I'm just not used to the
Hunchback of Notre Dame right now.
It's like one of those moments where you're just like, do I still really need to be doing this?
That is maybe those. Sometimes you need those. Those little come to Jesus moments.
Yeah.
I mean, you look good.
When was your come to Jesus moment when you stopped playing football? Because, I mean, there was a legacy.
When I was in eighth grade. when people were bigger than me and faster and cared more.
Yeah.
Stronger, too. Could not lift much.
But no one could match your intellect.
No. That's why I joined the band. That was like a big moment in my life that I'm glad that I figured it out. You know, when I just remember for freshman testing, as you came in, I think they still do it. They like one by one have you lift. Did I talk about this on the podcast?
I don't think so, but it's possible.
They like max you out, and so they'll start off like on a pretty low amount, and they basically just weed kids out.
Gotcha.
You go up to the bench, and your entire class, your freshman boys, are like watching you for the football team.
Oh, jeez.
I was like one of the first two or three out. It was just like, jeez.
It's just the bar at 45 pounds.
I have no upper body strength. That was a sign.
And is that when you just called your mom and she picked you up?
Mommy. I think my coach jumping over some of us.
Oh.
So the professional football player that came out of our school was a senior when I was going to be a freshman. And so the captain's practices during the summer, they're just like, yeah, they're pretty talented. And
so you were matched up across the line from Mike Ho.
There was one play. There was three of us, a freshman. I think I was playing cornerback at that time. And like a safety came over and someone else. And he like somehow just like mossed all of us. And it was just like, oh my gosh. Which is, it was cool in the moment, but it's also very demoralizing. Like, where was the road up from there? So that's what effectively ended my career. And I like playing sports. I don't like to let people down. So I think team sports were always tough for me.
Yeah. I
was that way too much of a share?
Yeah, that was
sorry.
You're doing great though.
Isn't that, I don't know. Are you the same way? I mean, you still play team sports, so probably not. But that was tough for me.
Gotcha. You have that anxiety. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Slowly, I just started dropping sports because I just don't have like an inherent competitive nature about me. So it's like, yeah, I mean, I really enjoy soccer and hockey, so I keep playing those. But like baseball, like I enjoyed, but I just like I needed to compete with people to win spots, and I'm lazy. Yeah. And I it's just
you're telling me.
But also just, I don't know.
Yeah, when did you quit sports?
when maybe this is a conversation we need to have it now.
Did you play all throughout college and stuff too, like recreationally?
Yeah.
So you never really quit?
No.
Yeah, I could. Like, I'm able to look back at my life and be like, hey, there's an 8-year chunk where I did not exercise, you know, or engage in a sport. You pretty much kept it together.
Yeah, 34 and still playing soccer. You're
still also getting hurt, though. So maybe, yeah, it doesn't really help you.
I don't know.
What I've learned from this is,
yeah, and what is I guess that's decay. The reason I bring it up is like, when is it time? Because like right now, I'm just like,
I think when was it time? It's about 4 years.
Right now, I'm just hobbling around the school and just like, is it worth it? Mary's having to listen to me every time I stand up, like the grunts of just like trying to wheel myself out of a chair.
I think you're still in an age where, yeah, you should still. Yeah. Normally people like run. I think you run.
That's the thing. Normal thing.
I think it's the contact sports that you need to stop.
But there's a guy who plays Thursday mornings who's in his 60s. He's just still out there.
Yeah, maybe, but he doesn't
he's
enjoy probably, his
maybe
life.
He's just. But also, this guy's from Phil. He's from New York.
Okay. So we. You grew up playing this stuff.
I mean, he's got the mustache and everything. I mean, Phyllis is a great guy. I don't actually know if he's from New York, actually, because he sounds like he is, and he wears a Rangers
probably
jersey
from
sometimes.
State.
Yeah, from the Finger Lakes, you know. Yeah. But I think he also isn't exactly throwing his body. He likes to kind of hang back.
And... he's like Mark Noble at the end of his career.
Exactly. People will get that reference.
Hey, if you got that reference, send us a quick email.
Yeah, please do. Anything else?
Bears lost last night in another embarrassing fashion, no. And it's just one thing on top of another.
That was brutal.
It is.
I just caught the first half at a small group, and it was it was bad.
I think I mentioned this before in the podcast. I just get my father more now.
In his outlook on
on
sports and life.
I don't think anything bad. I think Illinois basketball still rattles him. He's still kind of attached and trusts them and then loses trust. But I think I just I don't have any trust in any sports team I like, and I don't know if that's healthy. Just to not have any expectations, but that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I don't know. Because there is sometimes you have those sports that really affect you, like when your team loses, and then you're not as charitable for the next day or two. Like it's probably healthy to not have that level of attachment.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, you want to have an appropriate attachment where you're celebrating with the team when they win, you're enjoying it. I don't know. Sports are good.
Fandom is good. The other team's cheering at the end. Doesn't feel very good.
So I don't know. Yeah,
I don't think anyone was cheering after last night's performance.
I don't even think Washington was not walking off the field.
We don't deserve this. Let's get to the NFL draft next year.
Good stuff,
man.
Yeah, I mean, it just brings you back to good literature.
It does, right? That's building a story. I mean, speaking of a long teaser, we're both holding a.
This is what I wish we had a video.
Yeah,
one of us would pick up our Barnes & Noble copy of The Brothers K and shake it.
700 pages of
very fine print.
Very fine print.
I scared Ricky Adelman. He's in my CCL class. You were there, is in your study hall.
Shout
him
out,
and Ricky. Ian Whitaker. I showed them this book and said it was our next book for CCL. They're like,
whoa.
Anyway, I originally had something else planned for this week, but then things got changed, and I was like, well, what I want to talk about, what I think that we would enjoy talking about, and it's a book that you've read, it's Brothers K, and we've talked about this before, but it's also something I just started revisiting last week, and just the place that I picked up just smacked me, and it's just every time I keep picking it back up, I've read these two chapters now a few different times, and once I get to the end of them, I was like, that was so exciting.
Yeah.
And there's spiritual things that I want to talk about this. So it's not just talking about the novel or the events of the book. There's spiritual things. So do not check out. I think this is actually going to be one of our best episodes because I don't really have a plan, but I have things that have moved me.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about them with you.
Well, I think that's why we dive into great literature. And I think that's why we've been encouraging it. There are things within this book that isn't inherently spiritual that just absolutely rock you. And then you want to share it with somebody. And that only benefits not only yourself as you're kind of fleshing it out and using someone else as a soundboard, but it's going to also kind of draw other people outside of themselves.
What I like too, and I just thought of this kind of brings us full circle to why we began this stuff. Mm-hmm. When we were struggling in college, not struggling, just trying to have a soundboard, we would get together and we read things and they led to good conversations about things that we were dealing with. And I think that's what today is going to be more like, kind of our honest conversations and our interests and stuff. So The Brothers Cave, if you haven't listened to any of our other episodes, a Russian novel, exciting, written in the mid-1800s by Fyodor Dostoevsky. And he's just, the whole thing is kind of this great long book about these characters, these brothers, this fight for freedom, for what is freedom, what is authenticity, what is God, the existence, what is evil, what is original sin. It's kind of all these.
They battle with it all.
Yes. Like. So anyway, the portion that I want to talk about is not even, I don't know if it's the famous portion of the book. Is it?
No, I don't think so.
For Alyosha it is, but I'll get to that in a second.
Yes, yeah.
Everyone always knows like the Grand Inquisitor chapter where Ivan is challenging Alyosha. So there's three brothers who I mentioned before. Listen to like two podcasts ago. Dmitry, the oldest, who is angry and vengeful.
Dealing with anger, a relationship with his father, his meaning. Wrath is very much a part of
wrath, and just like I want things and I want them now. He wants this woman. He wants this thing. He wants his money from his dad. Ivan, the middle brother, is the intellectual who's really challenging things, but really seeking God within that challenge. And the famous chapter is Ivan challenging the youngest brother. So the middle brother challenging the youngest brother about the existence of God. But that was like wasn't as moving as this was for me. Mm-hmm. So Alyosha is portrayed as the hero of the book, protagonist of the book. He's the youngest son. He is studying to become a monk. He is devout. He is simple-hearted, like almost like a childlike love of God and the people around him. And he seems to be the glue in all these situations. What's going on in the town, all the problems. Yeah. It seems like everyone's trying to get Alyosha to solve the problems. And he is there with all these different peoples. Mm-hmm. Peoples. He's there with all these different people. And I find it interesting just about him in general. He is like a Christ-like figure, even though he's struggling with things in this chapter.
Yeah.
Because like he is with the outcasts of the city, and he's talking with all of them, even though he is the one wearing a cassock and the one that's in the monastery. It's funny in this book, he's just placed with all these people struggling at all these different points in their life. It's just, it reminds me so much, and I'll get to this at the end. But
yeah, I think it's, great chapter.
So what has just happened? Alyosha's spiritual director and mentor, Father Zosima, has died. Mm-hmm. This guy is a spiritual mystic, a guru that people have traveled from far away. He's a miracle worker. He is pretty much everything that Alyosha's put his life into, especially that past year. Like, think of your greatest hero in life has died. And he's not upset about the death. He was ready for the death, I think. It's what happened afterwards, which seems kind of silly to us. But in Russian culture at that time, especially in a monastery, was big. The body starts to decay naturally faster than it should.
Yeah.
And there was this idea that if he was like a living saint, like people said he was, that he wouldn't decompose. And there's all these rumors because people didn't like him. Mm-hmm. They all start to murmur about him and humiliate him and see he wasn't a great person. He was possessed by demons. He wasn't a man of God. And that just rocks Alyosha to his core.
Yeah.
And he has like what he says, the most fatal day of his life. Okay. So the priest that is still there looks at him and is like, are you of little faith too? And the narrator says, no, he's not having this problem in this moment because he's a little faith. It's actually because he has great faith. Mm-hmm. He is upset because he feels like justice has not been given. So where is the finger of providence in this? Not that he needed miracles to happen for him to believe in God. He thought, because this man served and loved you so much, wouldn't you do this for him? Mm-hmm. Like, that's why he's upset. He wanted justice. He thought that should be justice. So it's not like he has little faith. It's because, and I want to read this line. He says, someone else basically who had a lukewarm love or a mind that was too prudent would have avoided what happened to Alyosha. But Alyosha says, in some cases, it's really more credible to be carried away by an emotion, however unreasonable, which springs forth from a great love than to be unmoved. It's more credible to be carried away by an emotion, even if it's unreasonable, which springs forth from a great love than to be unmoved in that situation. And that's what we find in Alyosha. It's better sometimes to be unreasonable, to be able to be moved, to have these feelings.
Yeah.
Anything that stuck out to you right away? There's another line that I want to add to that, but
yeah,
when you read that, did that?
Yeah, it shows life. It shows authenticity. It shows your humanity. It shows that, your willingness to live in the moment, to allow this to overwhelm you, to share. I think it shows more of, we talked about the Russian history of the Russian people, and like the bitterness can enter in so young that like you begin to turn away and kind of buffer yourself from these types of feelings and willingness to be vulnerable or to engage it on this raw level. I just love the beauty in that. That talks about this idea that like, it's better that you allow your humanity to be, to exist, to be present in that moment. And it's not a bad thing.
It gives like a healthy full picture of what human life is like. Because I think in our modern setting, we've either overemphasized intellectuality, mm-hmm. like it's all about knowledge and facts, or we've overemphasized emotions. And there's no like healthy interplay between the two.
Right.
Because the narrator says, this may have been shallow and unreasonable that he got mad about this, but I repeat, I'm glad my hero showed himself not too reasonable at that moment, for any man of sense will always come back to reason in time.
Yeah.
He knows that he has that background and that intellectual belief in God, and that when he needs to, it'll come and it'll click to him. But he says, if love does not gain the upper hand in a boy's heart at such an exceptional moment, when will it? If you're not willing to be moved by a loving and caring heart, then what are you doing? For someone that matters so much to you, I know intellectually sometimes you get it, but like, haven't we all been there? We're intellectually, we get it, but we're just moved and we have these deep feelings and emotions, and those matter. If you're not feeling it at that moment, when will you? And I'm glad that he said, I'm glad he was not too reasonable at that moment. I'm glad that he felt those things, because we're going to see what comes out of the end of it mm-hmm. is something more, so much more beneficial for him.
Yeah.
But I just love, like, I think sometimes for people that are doctrinally minded and like, this is the doctrine of the Trinity, this is the doctrine of the church, like, this is like, that is good and has its place. And we look at these people that are like our culture today, I think a lot of the attacks are these emotional attacks, but what about the feelings of this person? And we look down on that. Or I think of my kids in my class, and they have all these like emotional appeals to things. And you're almost like, you silly person, like, can't you just see if this is the case and this is the case, logic, reason, common sense. I get that. And we like look down on that like it's a bad thing. And we don't look at the good, like the shadow side of that. They care. Mm-hmm. The care and the feelings they have maybe are misguided in that, but at least they care. I can work with that.
Yeah.
Like I think the critique that we found, that people don't care enough anymore. So why aren't we like caring? Like, why aren't we using that then? Like, you have emotions, you have feelings, you love things, you care for things. But is that ordered into the right thing? Mm-hmm.
And I think if you've shut yourself off from experiencing the emotions because you're afraid of them, distrust them, you've robbed yourself of new experiences and change of thought. And I think that's what you're getting at here, is like, if we can work with those experiences, those feelings, those passions, and see how they're working within their lives and how it can lead us to something else, like, then it's like you're actually living. Mm-hmm. But if you're keeping those at bay or at an arm's length, you've made your decision on life and that's just how I'll live it. Then it's like, well, you're not listening to how we, you know, to who you are and how you experience the world.
Cause I think your conscience is still speaking to you in that mm-hmm. moment. Cause it's saying, feel things.
Yeah.
How often as men too, we're told, suck it up.
Yeah.
Like, there's things that have rocked me and hurt me. Like, even just losing people in your life that you love, or losing a friendship, or something has happened to you. You've been embarrassed. You've been ashamed. And gosh, have I felt those feelings? But if I'm not dealing with them in a healthy way, gosh, do they affect me down the line? And so like Alyosha's in that place where he's willing to feel those feelings, even if they seem unreasonable at that moment. I love that.
Yeah.
But he is going through this big crisis. And instead of going somewhere healthy, he goes and lays down face down underneath the tree and he's crying. And Rakitin is this guy who's hanging around the monastery, who's just kind of a turd, cares just about himself. He really is. He comes and grabs him, basically, in this moment, and Alyosha is just looking for something. And he's like, gosh, I can't believe you, Alyosha, are denying God. And he says, I'm not rebelling against my God. I simply don't accept his world. So I think in that moment, he's even like understanding, like, I still believe in God. I just don't accept what's happening right now. It just doesn't seem right. Which, how many faithful people have been like that?
Absolutely.
And so he goes to like the most evil things that he can think of, which is funny. There's a chapter in Mere Christianity where it talks about like if evil people for once do something nice for someone, that's huge in God's eyes. And I think this chapter shows a lot of that, like that reckless love of God that people talk about. Yeah. Like that. Anyway, sorry. But his first temptation is sausage. Yeah. Like, I think, I don't remember, but I think he's supposed to be fasting or something.
Yeah.
And Keaton's like, I'm sure you haven't eaten anything. I have sausage in my pocket. You want it? He's like, yes, I'll eat the sausage. I also have vodka. I'm like, I'll drink some vodka. It's like these like little earthly things that might not be a big deal for other people. It was a big deal to Alyosha. Mm-hmm. And then he tricks him into going and seeing Grushenka, who's this woman in the village who actually his older brother and father are fighting over.
Yeah.
A woman who's actually really vindictive, vengeful, vicious. The day before just completely humiliated another person and found joy in that.
Yeah.
So this woman that he sees as almost this embodiment of doing evil within the world, mm-hmm. he's like, I'll go to Grushenka. And when we get there, Grushenka admits, like, she actually wanted to meet Alyosha because from her point of view, She said, I wanted to take advantage of him, really, because he was pure. He was holy. He was innocent. Whenever I saw you, your face haunted me because it was something. And I wanted to see if I could manipulate you, Alyosha. So she, like, when they get there, she sits on his lap. She's trying to make him uncomfortable. Eventually, she starts to ask, like, what's wrong? Because the two of them are talking, and Alyosha's not saying a word. And Rakitin tries to explain, he says his elder stinks. But what he means is, like, she doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Because it's two more pages before she realizes that Father Zosima, the hero of the town and Alyosha's hero, has died.
Yeah.
So she's still trying to make advances on him. She shares things about, like, I always looked at you and I felt ashamed. But I think this is in the book, but I think she sees her conscience in Alyosha.
Yeah.
Right? When she sees Alyosha, it reveals something more to her about how he lives his life and how she should live. And how true is that of us? Mm-hmm. When you see that, like, authentic saint, someone authentically living out their life and the struggles and joys, like, some people don't want to see that and it bothers them because it's a mirror. It's their conscience saying, like, I am made for something more.
Yeah.
But I love that part of that.
Yeah. And I think Rakuten himself wants to take joy in the demise of.
Yeah. Cause he's taking him there to.
Oh yeah.
I want to see a saint fall.
Exactly. And yeah. it's so funny that he goes to food, then he goes to drink and then lust. And he's just like, and anyone who really cared about Alyosha wouldn't take a man who was grieving into these temptations.
Yeah.
But he's got an order there. He's trying to run an errand that he knows is going to make himself some money. So he's like, well, might as well do it now.
Which is $25.
So he's like, so I'm going to get $25 and possibly see this holy man fall. So it's just hilarious that he's just like, well, here we go.
Yeah. So yeah, the difference between that is, like, Grushenka, when she realizes that Zosima has died, someone that's so important to him, mm-hmm. to Alyosha, she says, goodness, what have I been doing sitting on his knee like this at such a moment? And it was this kind of pity that she took on him that, like, snapped him out of his little, like, stupor that he was in. It says, Alyosha bent a long, wandering look upon her, and a light seemed to dawn in his face. He starts to finally talk, and he says to Rakitin, he says, I've lost a treasure as you've never had. You cannot judge me right now. And then he says, look at, do you see how she has had pity on me? I came here to find a wicked soul. I felt drawn to evil because I was base and evil myself, and I found a true sister. I found a treasure, a loving heart. And that was, like, I think that's what I was trying to make earlier, that connection of, like, Alyosha in that moment where he was being unreasonable is showing that he has this loving heart. I think that's the key, the connection between humans that could be so different.
Mm-hmm.
The connection of the saints, all of them in unique ways had this loving heart, and they lived that out, and they were eccentric. They were different. And that's how Dostoevsky describes Alyosha in the beginning of the book. He says he's eccentric. He cares. And he says, I found a sister in this moment. I thought I was going to find someone evil. And she does have evil intentions in a lot of things.
Yeah.
But she has a loving heart. She was willing in that moment to say, wow, and, like, have pity on Alyosha. And that meant so much, just that small little action.
Yeah. Yeah, and as opposed to Rakuten's desire to, it's all about him, what's in it for me, and, oh, and can I bring someone down mm-hmm. or destroy someone along the way just for, you know, for kicks. But for her, even, yeah, with her evil intentions, she recognizes the need of another. And I think that's that charity, that love, that she puts aside what she had planned to recognize a wound or a need in another. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
and that's all God needs sometimes.
Exactly. I think what I love about Alyosha's character is the quote about, as the world turns, what?
Well, the cross is steady.
The cross is steady.
The world is turning.
I just picture, and I think you do. People who aren't watching this on YouTube, because it's not there, miss your hand motion as you're just describing Alyosha's put amongst all of these people. And it is like there's all this different drama and different side stories and his brothers. But Alyosha remains at the center of this. And what is at the center of this is the heart of Christ, this Christian charity, this good that resides at the center of this town amongst all of its there's other goods, but there's also, like, great sorrow and pain and destruction. And Alyosha's stance is kind of that sign, that cross that stands in the center, mm-hmm. this of Christian charity that remains the great good that often people tap into because it breaks through their world that they're in. And,
yeah.
they recognize that good in Alyosha.
He's just so honest too.
Mm.
Like, you have those self-righteous people, and sometimes I can be that way, where you feel like you have it all figured out, you know it. But he is so honest, even in this moment, which he might seem silly, he is hurting and he has this loving heart. And I just love throughout this and throughout the story and many things, what moves me sometimes is the loving heart of a sinner, mm-hmm. which sounds weird, but, like, the loving heart that a sinner can still have.
Yeah.
And how no one is too far away. Like, I think I want to get back to the story, but, like, the two images that I have within my, like, little kind of prayer room within my house, we've talked about one of them, the return of the prodigal mm-hmm. son. This little, he looks like an infant in the father's arms.
Yeah.
Like, this sinner has done so much. It just has to turn a little bit. And there's the Caravaggio. Caravaggio does a great job at this, at depicting this, at the dirty people that are coming for scraps. And they just have this like little loving heart of like, please, like it's the Madonna and the Pilgrim.
Yeah.
You can look that up. But these two pilgrims that are like dirty are just trying to get into this door. And it's Mary glowing with the baby, with the Christ child. Mm-hmm. Like, just please like let us in. Like, I don't know, those moments of art, of the scriptures, of literature like this, just, I don't know what it is. It just gets me.
Yeah.
The loving heart of a sinner and how God just needs just a little bit. Yeah, so she is then profoundly moved because Alyosha, who she looks up to, calls her a sister. Like, we are the same. Mm-hmm. We have the same loving heart. And it's hard for her to like grasp that because she said, I haven't done anything like you've done. Like, how can you call me a sister in that moment? And the narrator says each of them was just passing through a spiritual crisis such as does not come often in a lifetime. Rikitan could not see that. He was only sensitive about what concerned himself.
Yeah.
So he's sitting there and he looks back and says, they're both crazy. Like, I'm in a madhouse right now. These weirdos, like how he doesn't get that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that
he's the cynic. He's dismissive.
Yes. He doesn't understand. He doesn't have that loving heart. He doesn't get what they're doing.
Yeah. He's not really seen.
He gets his $25. She doesn't seem like she's done much. So when Alyosha says, you are just like me, we are brother and sister, this loving heart. She's like, I haven't done anything in my life. She remembers this little story, this parable that I think her grandma told her when she was little about this, woman who, basically, the woman dies, and she's going to hell because she hasn't really done anything. She was a mean person. She's mean-spirited, mean-hearted. And her guardian angel is trying to save her in this last moment, trying to think of something she did. She's like, one time she gave someone an onion. And she's like, he's pleading to God, like, will you look upon this one action? And God's like, okay, well, she's like in like the fire,
yeah,
the lake fire right now. And so the angel's like, if you could pull her out with this onion, then she can come to heaven. So the angel puts out this onion, and she grabs onto the onion. But then people are starting to grab and trying to go with her, and she starts kicking them away. And then immediately the onion rips and she falls into this because like she still doesn't get it. This was her opportunity to show like these little actions matter. You can bring people with you in salvation. That's what it is sometimes.
Yeah.
Us grasping onto that one little onion we gave, and that action brings other people with us. But she still wasn't able to see that bigger picture. So Grushenka actually, she first brags to Rikitan and is like, I gave an onion. Like, and then she realizes to Alyosha, she's like, I've only given an onion. Mm-hmm. It's funny, like our perspective on this too. Like when we feel like we're better at someone, like look at all these great things I did. But then like in the perspective of what I should be, we're like, oh crap, there's so much more I could have done. Alyosha kind of puts everything together. He says, I didn't speak to you as a judge, but as the lowest of the judged. And I love that self-honesty that he has. He says, what am I beside her? I came here seeking my ruin. I said to myself, what does it matter? I have been in this place just like you. You might not think of that, but I felt that way inside. That was like in the other podcast when he said to Dimitri, I'm just like you. Mm-hmm. I'm a Karamazov too. I have sensualist struggles. I might not be on the same level, but I'm there with you, man.
Yeah.
The man who has wronged her has come. Like, so basically, Grushenka does a lot more. The man who has wronged her in her past, she's willing to now forgive, and he brings that up. She is more loving than we, is what Alyosha says to Rikit. But Grushenka eventually is like, I don't know what he said to me. It went straight to my heart. He has wrung my heart. He is the first person, the only one who has pitied me. I've been waiting my whole life for someone like you. I knew that someone like you would come and forgive me. And that is that Christ-like figure. Mm-hmm. She is meeting Christ in Alyosha.
Yeah.
It's just so beautiful. It's just this one moment of Alyosha, them both having this mutual pity for each other, understanding and walking with them in those small moments, mm-hmm. and realizing the connection of their loving heart. And what Grushenka needed was just someone to show her that love, because so many men have just looked at her and loved her in a way of what they wanted from her.
Right.
Alyosha's just pitying her and loving her for even just giving that onion.
Yeah.
It was just so cool.
Yeah. I think her own humanity and worth is revealed again in his simple love and recognition that she is suffering and we are suffering. And together, I don't know. There's a bond that is restored there. Like of course love, but also just like a recognition that like, I don't know, you see me.
Mm-hmm.
You see me for who I am, and you've revealed that to me.
We're all messy.
Yeah. And I think that's what I love about Alyosha in this story. It's like, I see him as this cross that stands at the center of maybe this town, but also it's the cross that is amidst his own suffering. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where Christ is present, right? He's present in the suffering and his own faults, but he shows that love and that cross and the humanity of others amidst his own strugglings and sufferings and battles. And so it's like, even like you said, like no sinner is too far gone. Like yeah, even a sinner, when he or she has these moments, can reveal that love of Christ to another and can be a means, mm-hmm. like you said, to grab others and bring them with. They don't need to be perfect to change the hearts of other individuals.
Yeah.
Alyosha will admit himself, like, is far from the perfection, but yet has such a profound impact in people's lives because he's present to them, he's Christ to them, and he's present
to Christ too.
Right? And, and he's because of it, his own prayer life and belief and his willingness to be vulnerable and to recognize the vulnerability in others and be selfless.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's simple. It's a simple thing. It's just to recognize the humanity in another and to be open to and receptive to what it is.
What is they're living in their life. Hugo from Les Mis?
To see another human
is to see the face of God or something?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, it's a cheesy line that's been given, but it's so true. And exactly. I think Christ, like, just like Alyosha, is like, I'm with you and I'm feeling that. That's what mm-hmm. Christ did. Like, exactly. I know what suffering is. I came mm-hmm. and died. Like, I suffered for you. I've taken this on myself. God has done that for us and has lived that out with us.
Yes.
And there's something like so endearing about that. I'm here with you in this struggle. And like that, how Christ is that he is ending up with Rakitin, the person who's just bitter, who just wants money and take advantage of people, his brother Dimitri, who just wants to beat people's faces in, his brother Ivan, who is intellectually just, God doesn't exist, the church is evil and corrupt, Grushenka, who is like he is meeting, like that is so Christ though. Mm-hmm. Christ didn't just like teach the sinners, like he ate with them. Mm-hmm. He lived with them, lived with their life and heard them and was willing to go to those places that the Pharisees weren't willing to go.
Yes.
That's how Alyosha, I think, ends up at Grushenka's house. He's willing to go to these places. He's willing to go to the bar and debate with his brother Ivan and hear him out. Even if it hurts him what Ivan's saying, like he's willing to go to that place.
So true. Creates so many different opportunities for that love to be lived, that Christian charity to be lived, and what great opportunities it does lead to, right?
And that's like, from my perspective as a teacher, I don't have it all figured out,
right.
But I think that's something that I've been able to see. Not that our kids are like Grushenka,
right?
But like they are messy. They have messy lives. They have messy understandings of the world and of love and of God. And to meet them in that,
yeah.
And like I said, like I was saying at the beginning, they have this care. They have this love within them, and to see that potential.
Yeah. I think you've got to be willing to wade into those waters and yeah, we say it all the time. Meet them where they're at.
I hope you've been staying with us. I know it's been maybe a little bit longer in a book that you have not read, but mm-hmm. I really hope, I want to wrap this all up, but I hope that you've been listening, even though this is making me more excited.
Yeah, I wish you guys could see the smiles on our faces because we're both just like really enjoying this, and I hope you are too.
I love encouraging people to pray in the morning, but like this is the stuff that like the, I don't know, this is exciting stuff to work through.
Yeah.
Things portrayed in a
and this
way.
Is a, what is this, like 12, 15 pages of a 700 page book?
But I love, okay. So he ends up leaving this house and he goes back because it was a tradition that you would read the gospels, like the other priests within the monastery before, from the time that someone died to the funeral, someone would sit there in constant kind of, what would you call that? Wake.
Yeah.
Like reading the gospels out loud. So he goes back to this chamber. The body still smells. Okay. But he has this moment where the priest at the time is reading the wedding at Cana. I don't think you read that. I didn't tell you to read that chapter. But he's reading the story of the wedding at Cana, and Alyosha is going in and out of prayer and like listening to that and like thinking, like many of us, you read scripture and your mind kind of wanders on these thoughts and maybe it helps guide you, but that's what's happening. But in the midst of this, when he's still struggling through this, piecing things together, still mad at God's world because he doesn't know why things are happening, he finally has, he hears his voice of Father Zosima talking to him in this prayer. He talks to Alyosha and says, "We are rejoicing. We are drinking the wine of new great gladness. Do you see how many guests, the bride, the bridegroom, the wise governor? Why do you wonder at me? I gave an onion to a beggar, so I too am here. And many here have given only an onion each, only one little onion. What are all our deeds? And you, my gentle one, you, my kind boy, you too have known how to give a famished woman an onion today. Begin your work, dear one. Begin it, gentle one. Do you see our son? Do you see him?" Like talking about Christ. He says, "I'm afraid. I dare not look. Do you fear him? He is terrible in his greatness, awful in his sublimity, but infinitely merciful." So he's going through this whole trouble. And Zosima comes to him and says, like, "We are not suffering right now. We are rejoicing in the gladness of this wedding banquet. It's me who's only given an onion." Like Zosima, again, having that like humility of, "I've done very little," even though people would say he's done a lot. Mm-hmm. "And the other people with me have only given an onion. And you today, you started your journey. You are becoming like me now. You gave an onion to that woman because you were able to see Christ in her, like I've been able to see Christ in these people. And you're going to join me too." I just love that. And he's like, look how great Christ is. And Alyosha's scared, but it's like, no, he is almighty.
but he is infinitely merciful. And I just love
it's beautiful
that leading. And let me just leave off with one thing. So he ends up leaving the cell after this happens. It says he did not stop on the steps either, but went quickly down. His soul overflowing with rapture, yearned for freedom, space, and openness. I don't know what happens to him after this because I haven't read. Mm-hmm. But he's leaving the monastery. Zosima actually told him, like, go pursue things.
Yeah.
So he's finally feeling this space, this openness, this freedom. It kind of has this bigger context. If I'm supposed to go and give these onions, I'm supposed to see the loving heart in people. He says, the vault of heaven, full of soft shining stars, stretched vast and fathomless above him. The Milky Way ran in two pale streams from the zenith to the horizon. The fresh, motionless, still night enfolded the earth. The white towers and golden domes of the cathedral gleamed out against the sapphire sky. The gorgeous autumn flowers and the beds around the house were slumbering till morning. The silence of the earth seemed to melt in the silence of the heavens. The mystery of earth was one with the mystery of the stars. Alyosha stood, gazed, and suddenly threw himself down on the earth. He did not know why he embraced it. He could not have told you why he longed so irresistibly to kiss it all. But he kissed it, weeping, sobbing, and watering it with his tears, and vowed passionately to love it forever and ever. Water the earth with the tears of your joy, and love those tears echoed in his soul. Now, I just read two paragraphs there. Sorry, but it was just written so well.
Yeah.
He's had this moment. He's weeping because, remember, he rejected creation, mm-hmm. all the good things of God. He's trying to manipulate it. Right. And now he's embracing it. Like, this is what I'm called to do right here. And it reminds me so much of Augustine when he's out in that garden and he's just weeping and these tears are just, what did they say? Watering the earth.
Yeah. Love it.
Live these emotions out, people.
Mm-hmm.
I have cried at points in my life.
Yeah.
And those were so deep.
Okay. If you're still here, thank you for like, we have been stopped. The bell just interrupted me. As I said, I've cried at multiple points in my life. So basically, yeah, just to feel these things, they have a loving heart. I don't really remember what I was saying, but I hope that you've gotten something out of this passage, this whole story. But
yeah, and I think every time we are faced with an emotion, positive or negative, I mean, there's something to be drawn from it. And I think that, again, it's part of our humanity. It points to something else, and it's good to sit with those and not be afraid of those. So I think Alyosha there at the end, right? He just allows himself to be kind of overrun with emotion. He's drops to his knees and just like this gratitude and love mm-hmm. that now he sees now in a clearer way, not in a perfect way,
yeah. but
in a clearer way what his role is in this world and what he's called to.
Yeah. Like many of us, like he had a problem. He was trying to figure it out. He went to the wrong things, but was able to keep seeking with his loving heart because he had some kind of compass. He had some kind of understanding of love and who love was. And it helped him work his way through that to then finally be open in that moment of prayer and vulnerability when he went back to the cell where the body was, to hear that and have Zosima and really Christ speak to him. Just like you saw today, like you were on the right step when you gave that small little onion to Grushenka by seeing that love in her and her back to you, like giving you what you needed in that moment. That's where it is. Meet the messy, work through it in life. Have that compass and have that love directing you. That line of, I'm glad that my hero was not too reasonable at that moment because that's what he was able to do. Like if he just uses intellect, I just don't know if he would have learned the same thing. And that's not saying don't use what you know to be true, but I think we're just too hard on emotions nowadays in our hyper scientific world. Like we are humans and those matter, and we learn so much from those.
Yeah, it's all about a healthy balance between emotion, reason, and that speaks to our humanity as body and soul.
And love isn't reasonable. I love that. Like,
yeah,
I love that.
Love it.
Okay.
Any shout-outs?
I don't know. I'm exhausted from all that and from like the four things I'm going to patch together now.
I was going to say,
we've been cut off a couple of times. We did run a little bit later this
time. That's true. Shout out to Joey Head for all the editing he's going to have to do with this episode because we were interrupted by multiple bells, even a student or two. Man.
But you know what? That was a moment for me to give an onion to that kid.
Absolutely.
And to not just be like, what are you doing?
Get out.
Get out.
Yeah, I hope everybody enjoyed this. I hope you stuck through it. Just based off the smiles on our faces, we truly love this. Thank you.
We get three
for listening to us. Because yeah. It was certainly helpful for us. For the kingdom.
For the kingdom.